clerk will read the caption to House Bill 772.
House Bill 772 by Representative Morris of the 156. To amend Chapter 4, Title 49 of the Official Code of Georgia annotated relating to public assistance so as to require drug testing for applicants for food stamps. This bill having come before the Committee on Judiciary. Committee recommends same do pass by committee substitute and be read for the third time.
Chair recognizes Chairman Morris to present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Distinguished members of the House, in 2012, it was the wisdom of this body to pass House Bill 861, which required mandatory drug testing for TANF benefits. Subsequently, there was a Florida law on which House Bill 861 was primarily based on. That law was ruled unconstitutional in the 11th Circuit Court. It was upheld late fall of 2013. House Bill 772 was originally written with the same language as 861. It just applied to the SNAP program, better known as food stamps. Subsequently, we have a substitute to House Bill 772, and this is what it does at this point. It allows drug testing for both TANF and SNAP if a reasonable suspicion, that's the wording from the court, a reasonable suspicion exists for both TANF and SNAP. Also, the bill calls for the Department of Human Services to require that the EBT card would have a photograph of at least one or more members of the families using it for by January the 1st, 2016. Again, the primary changes to the bill were based on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ruling. We believe the bill is crafted to meet those constitutional requirements. And that's the bill. Madam Speaker, I'll be glad to answer any questions if there are any.
Gentleman has questions. Chair recognizes the Minority Leader Abrams for a question.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Will the gentleman yield?
Yes.
First, I'd like to clarify, did you say that the 11th Circuit upheld the drug testing benefits in Florida or affirmed the injunction?
If I did, I misspoke. They affirmed the injunction of the 11th Circuit Court. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the mandatory drug testing in the Florida law was an unreasonable search and seizure based on the Fourth Amendment. I don't happen to agree with that, but that was the ruling.
Thank you. I want to clarify that. Oh, will you further yield?
Yes.
Is it not true that under the terms of your bill, line starting at line 42, that DHS will have to create a system for eligibility workers to screen for substance abuse, as we are now requiring reasonable suspicion?
Yes, the caseworkers will make that determination.
And can you speak to? I'm sorry. Please continue.
No. Go ahead.
Can you speak to the training that will be required for DFACS workers to be able to screen for reasonable suspicion of drug use? Will they undergo post-training as the police do in order to not violate the Fourth Amendment?
I wouldn't suspect so, no.
Can you speak then to the training that they will undergo so that they can meet the constitutional requirement of the Fourth Amendment so they can have a reasonable suspicion?
Now, we're talking about caseworkers at DFACS, right?
Correct.
I mean, I don't know of anybody more qualified when it comes to families and drug abuse. DFACS people deal with it all the time. And let's face it, I mean, reasonable suspicion, I don't think that's very difficult.
So would you agree that we require police officers to undergo training to be able to meet the Fourth Amendment standard to adequately determine reasonable suspicion when subjecting someone to search and seizure?
If I was going to arrest somebody, again, now, I don't agree that it is unreasonable search and seizure. And you're talking about police officers and you're talking about arrest powers. These folks have no authority to arrest anyone. As a matter of fact, in the bill, it says that this information will not be used to prosecute anybody for any crime. This is just an attempt to protect taxpayers' dollars if, in the event, there's someone that is using drugs and that is getting benefits from the taxpayers. I can't think of any more egregious misuse of taxpayer dollars than to subsidize drug abuse, if that's the case. But now that's not the only criteria as a person's behavior. There's police records, employment records that would lend to there was an issue.
Will the gentleman further yield? Mm-hmm. So you referred to the 11th Circuit. The 11th Circuit found that it was an unreasonable search and seizure. There was no issue of arrest involved in the underlying Florida law. The Fourth Amendment does not require that arrest be a part of an unreasonable search. It simply requires that a government body intrude upon a person's reasonable possession of their body. So in this instance, the possibility of arrest is not necessary. So my question is, given that when we are trying to meet as a governmental entity the requirement of the Fourth Amendment, we require certain training. Are we going to provide that training to DFACS workers so that they meet the same standard that is set forth by the 11th Circuit in their injunction against the underlying bill that we are trying to replicate?
I appreciate your interpretation. I just don't agree with it.
So we are not – well, my question isn't – it's less an interpretation than a question. Are we going to require training of DFACS workers to meet the Fourth Amendment standard
if
from reasonable search and seizure?
If I were head of the Department of Human Services, I would not, no.
Okay, so we will not train. My last question then is, how will we as a state meet the obligation that we not violate the Fourth Amendment if we do not intend to provide training to these workers who will be held responsible for determining drug use from amongst the defects cases that they're responsible for?
Again, I mean, we're going in circles. I just guess I don't think that that's a violation of the Fourth Amendment not to have a person with specific training to be able to notice, to be able to read from an employment record that this person was fired because of habitual drug use. And then it would be their duty to ask that person to, because that's in the criteria, to submit to a drug test if they were eligible for the benefit.
So if I may summarize, we do not intend to require training of the DFACS workers who will be responsible for determining whether a person is in violation of this bill as set forth in Section C1.
There's nothing in the bill that requires that.
Thank you, sir.
Chair recognizes Representative Dukes for a question. To your left.
Would the gentleman yield?
Yes.
Did we set forth in the bill who pays the cost of the test? Will there be a cost associated with the test?
There would be. I believe if it's your Medicaid eligible, you would not, or it'd be a 17 capped at a $17 fee. Otherwise, the applicant would pay for it.
And the applicant would pay for the test?
That's correct.
If the test comes back negative, then who pays?
The applicant in this version.
So
I'm not opposed. Let me say this. I would not be opposed if it were possible. We can't do it right here. That would be reimbursed in the form of benefits if the person tested negative. Fair. I'll concede that, yes.
Would the gentleman further yield?
Yes.
If you can recall, I think you were here also during that time, wherein that legislators were required to be drug tested before as a part of our qualifying.
I did that in 1994, and I didn't like it much because I got beat, so it wasn't very good luck. But I remember that, yeah.
Did you think that was an unreasonable search and seizure for a legislator?
I must not have. I did it.
Is it not true that the courts did not agree with you? And as a result, we are no longer drug tested. Is it not true that you think that maybe some of the legislators, no one from this body, but would even consider that? But, Mr. Representative, it is somewhat is. So you do not think that it is unreasonable search and seizure for someone to have to come in and submit for a drug test?
No, I don't. And, again, now the 11th Circuit Court said that you could if there was reasonable suspicion.
Did we define reasonable suspicion?
Yes. It's just defined in, I think it's, I'm no lawyer, I think it's defined in code.
Would we know what that is? What is reasonable suspicion?
You know, I don't know an anecdotal, just if I'm at a quickie store and it's 11:30 at night and a 30-year-old Trans Am pulls up with hubcaps missing, the guy gets out with sunglasses on and goes by three frozen burritos and puts them in, I'm reasonably suspecting he's high. I've been around, I've said I know, and these people have too. We're not kidding. These people aren't babes in the woods when it comes to the families and drugs in the homes. They know better than we do.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Representative.
You're welcome. One more question.
Okay. Final Madam question. Speaker. Chair recognizes Representative Hightower for a question.
Oh. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Does the gentleman yield?
I will.
Is it not true that this bill's goal is to protect the taxpayer dollars of Georgia?
That is its only goal.
And isn't it further true that if the courts rule this bill, like the bill in Florida, to be unconstitutional, that we will come again, whether it's you or me or some other Republican from this body, to step up again and submit another bill to go to try to protect the taxpayer dollars of this state?
This would be my hope, Representative Hightower, that Florida fights the ruling and that they carry it all the way to the Supreme Court, and there's a favorable ruling that it is not an illegal search and seizure to require somebody to take a drug test. What you require working Georgians to do in many instances that is unreasonable for someone getting government benefits that worker is paying for, to me, is outrageous. There's other things outrageous about this bill. This bill isn't complete. There is something that I'm going to leave you with this before I go that I want you all to understand what it means. Broad-based categorical eligibility. And what you all many don't know, and I didn't know when I started this process, is that you can walk in. It's my understanding from the DFACS folks, and I am sure because I listened to it twice, if you were eligible for non-cash TANF benefits, you are automatically eligible for food stamps. How do you think it's increased in the last 6 years that it has? 43 states are doing it. They have been encouraged by the current administration to do it to swell the food stamp rolls. We better wake up. When we come back, that's what we need to do. The legislature needs to be making the rules on eligibility for food stamps, and we should have the same work requirements that we had for TANF. And when that happened in the mid-90s, the TANF rolls plummeted. We'd see the same thing if the federal government had the courage to either do it themselves or allow us to have the same requirements for food stamps that we do for TANF.
As a taxpaying citizen of Georgia, I greatly appreciate you bringing this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Gentleman has yielded the well. The chair recognizes Representative Evans to speak on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I rise to oppose House Bill 772. Now, I know that many in here do not agree with me that the bill unfairly targets our poorest citizens and seeks to erect burdens before those struggling to feed a family on $136.40 a month. I'm not naive. I know that a lot of us do not agree on that. I also know that many of you do not agree with me that it's foolish for us to pass legislation requiring us to expend state resources to implement and administer requirements to save federal tax dollars. Again, I'm not naive, and I know that many of you do not agree with me on that. But I think that many of you do join me in my great respect, admiration, and appreciation for our public safety personnel and military veterans. I'm certain of that. There's an aspect of this bill that cannot be reconciled with respect, admiration, and appreciation for public safety personnel and military veterans. If you'll join me and look at the bill on lines 183 to 195, you will see that those lines seek to set forth what might constitute reasonable suspicion to allow drug testing under this bill. Subsection C provides that a person's, quote, previous employment or application for employment in an occupation or industry that regularly conducts drug screening will make that person reasonably suspicious of drug use and subject to a drug test. If this bill passes, then, in effect, we will classify all public safety personnel, our police and our firefighters, our military veterans, as reasonably suspicious for drug use simply because of their past employment in a profession that subjected them to random drug tests. Note, it's not whether they previously tested positive for drug use. It's simply whether they held a job where they were subject to a drug test. Not only is this insulting to our men and women in uniform, but it also happens to give them all great standing to bring a very strong lawsuit for infringement of their rights because they're being singled out in this bill. I don't think that was the intent. And I understand that the desire to save money on social services and prevent the misuse of government funds. I share that desire. I understand the desire to pass a law to address constitutional concerns that arose after the 11th Circuit addressed the Florida bill. But in our haste to accomplish these goals, we should not place our men and women who work day in and day out to protect us from harm into a category of reasonably suspicious and subject them to drug tests. And I hope you will join me in voting no to HB 772, and I yield the well.
The lady has yielded the well. The chair recognizes Representative Randall to speak on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. HB 772 is a bill that disturbs me for several reasons. I had the privilege of working at a DFACS, worked on the old Work First program. I don't know if y'all remember that under Michael Thurman, where our whole goal was to help those that were really sincerely interested in helping themselves. And I found that a lot of folks that came that needed help were people that either had an illness that caused them to file bankruptcy, a bad divorce that where they found themselves living a life that they've never, ever imagined. And I found out that there was a last resort when they came to actually get help. You know, it's in situations like those where people just need a temporary hand, some help. But what this bill will do is, just when they've gotten up that ounce of courage to go and get some help because their families desperately need help, what does this do to that courage? It puts them under a cloud of suspicion for no probable cause. While we should be trying to help those in poverty overcome their obstacles and to improve their standings in the community, This bill will do totally the opposite of that. This bill is flawed because it creates an unwarranted, baseless cloud of suspicion around those, our lowest rungs of the income ladder. I don't think that's what we're here to do. You know, we talk about the Ten Commandments. We want to put them, we want to have them engraved on stone and granite. But now I'm beginning to question if the Ten Commandments are hidden in your hearts. Do you know them? Do you really know them? Do you live them? Because if you think this is a good bill, I question that. Because see, the God I serve in his short span of life on this earth, 33 years, all he did was hang out with the least of these, healing, feeding, and taking care of those that could not take care of themselves. But what this bill does, these folks that can't take care of themselves in the state of Georgia, well, you can't take care of yourself, and we may help you, but you look like you might just do drugs. That bothers me, y'all. And y'all, I mean, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I've been there and done that. Most of you all know where I come from. But when you're a Christian, you have to look at people's situation. You have to meet people where they are and do what you can do to help. Because that's what I've been taught as a Christian. Because, you know, WWJD is what I live by. And I just don't think that my God would kick someone when they're already down. And it takes a lot for people to finally get up the courage to say, I've got to go get some help. I got to go stand in line. I've got to go tell somebody all of the details of my life just to feed my children. We got to do better than this, y'all. We've got to be better than this as a state. And we've got to embrace the responsibility of this oath of office. And that's to take care of Georgians, the least of these, all the way up to the higher income of Georgians in this state. Everybody deserves an opportunity. And I think that HB 772 will probably deter some folks from getting the help that they need to feed their families. I certainly hope you all will consider and not just vote because it's, you know, it's down the party line or because you just think those folks that are trying to get TANF, they all, you know, are trying to beat the system or they have issues. Well, we've all got issues. If you think you don't, then you got bigger issues. So I hope you will dig deep and remember, all of us Christians, what Christ really did on this earth, and that's look out for the least of these. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I yield the will.
Chair recognizes Representative Sharper to speak on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This evening, I question the constitutionality of the drug testing in House Bill 772. I believe that this bill will penalize many innocent and disadvantaged Georgians at times when they needed help the most. In the past, mandatory drug and alcohol tests have been the subject of the food stamp debate. This bill targets Georgians for drug testing solely because they need help from a safety net program. It harms families, it wastes taxpayer dollars, and it's likely unconstitutional. House Bill 772 is medically unsound and creates an unjustified cloud of suspicion around people at the lowest rungs of the income ladder who are just trying to help their families in a bad economy. We're talking about families living on every cent that they earn, with barely any money to spare to travel to take the drug test that we're talking about. These are families that would have to miss just a few hours of their minimum wage job and maybe that's some of the money that they needed to take care of their families. Using drug tests to identify people in the need of treatment for illicit substance is totally flawed. I think it's flawed. Food stamps help many people who are out of work or can't work. Moreover, one out of three households using food stamps include working adults. However, their wages is not enough to take care of them and their families and for them to survive. While this bill longs to weed out drug users and illicit substance abusers, House Bill 7072, it simply hinders the process rather than help. This delay can cause confusion and increase the paperwork. We have a responsibility to our constituents to stand for their best interests. This bill does not stand for the best interests of the citizens from the low-income families. Taxpayer dollars could be put to a much better use than drug testing without suspicion. This is a waste of valuable time of those who administer and process drug tests. And due to the large amount of Georgians who receive SNAP benefits, we can be sure that the workloads would be unnecessarily increased. This bill is a disservice for our Georgians. Do not support this bill. I stand strong on speaking out against this bill. This bill fosters unwarranted stereotype, blaming people who need help from safety net programs for their circumstances and casting suspicion on them like as users of illicit drugs. So I stand here as a representative of Georgia, being the person I am that truly, truly help people and want to make things better for us. I stand against this bill, and I ask you to look deep inside your heart and look at what we're doing. Some things we do just because, and some things we do because we want to help. But I ask you this time, don't just do this bill because. Let's do this bill and support, do not support this bill. Do not support it because it's not going to help the people that they say that we're close to the people. We're close enough to the people to try to help them, but this in no way, shape, form, or fashion will help our Georgians that we're supposed to serve. Thank you.
The gentleman has yielded the well. The chair recognizes Representative Holcomb to speak on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I oppose House Bill 772 because I think it's unconstitutional and it's also not going to be cost effective. When we had this debate a couple years ago, I said that with respect to the bill for welfare testing. The court struck it down. They struck it down at the district court level. They struck it down at the 11th Circuit. It was very clear that this is deemed to be an unreasonable search and seizure under the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment, in case you need a reminder, states that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be searched. The Fourth Amendment, of course, is applicable to the states through the 14th Amendment, and searches are unconstitutional if they are unreasonable. To be unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment, a search ordinarily must be based on individual suspicion of wrongdoing. So with respect to the factors, and I understand the genesis for this, since the other measures have been struck down as unconstitutional, the intent is to try to find a way to make it constitutional. But if you look at them, they're incredibly broad, and I'm confident that they would not withstand constitutional scrutiny. If you look at, for example, line 47, an applicant's or recipient's demeanor is one of the factors by which we can determine reasonable suspicion. You can drive a truck through that. Demeanor, that's how we're going to determine whether or not somebody or reasonable suspicion exists. Missed appointments and arrest or other police records. I'd be okay with arrest or other police records, and certainly that would be more material if they involved drug offenses. Might make sense to have included that. But missed appointments, if they're explained missed appointments, then why would that be problematic and why would that lend itself to being reasonable suspicion? With respect to previous employment or application for employment in an occupation or industry that regularly conducts drug screening, that certainly would include those who have served, as Representative Evans said, in either public safety or in the armed services. From my own experience with drug testing in the armed forces, I was tested from age 18 until I left at age 30. Passed every single test. I've never used drugs in my life. I don't condone it. I also agree with the authors of the bill and others who don't want any taxpayer money to be wasted by those who are breaking the law. That makes sense. But these criteria are so overbroad that they're simply not going to withstand constitutional scrutiny. And so we're going to be right back where we started. I would submit to you that besides just the constitutionality of it in terms of the cost-effective nature of it, a lot of this is in fact duplicative. As mentioned, many of the service members are already getting drug tested. Many people who are in private industry are already getting drug tested. So why are we going to spend even more money when many of these tests are already taking place? So I submit to you that not only is it unconstitutional, it's not the best use of our resources, and it isn't very cost effective. I did a survey to look at what other states are doing, and in light of the other measures being struck down as unconstitutional, there are two states that have attempted something similar. Utah has a questionnaire for people to use, and that questionnaire is designed to help identify whether there is a reasonable suspicion. And then Tennessee has set up a plan to have their Department of Human Services develop a plan to implement a suspicion-based drug testing program. But there's none that looks like what we're proposing to do here, where, again, as a reminder, just your demeanor or the fact that you worked in an industry where drug tests were regularly conducted, that satisfies reasonable suspicion. I think this bill needs a lot more work if it's going to move forward. And another thing that I want to just highlight to you in terms of the face of who uses these benefits, and again, I'm not defending anybody who misuses taxpayer money, but the veterans community, I was shocked to see this, $104 million worth of food stamps were used at military commissaries last year. $104 million were used at military commissaries, food stamp dollars, last year. So that is a big part of the population that we are talking about. In E1, somebody who's enlisted and just goes into the service, they make about $20,000 a year base salary. That goes up when you add in housing and other allowances, but they're at that level where they're on food stamps. The military commissaries don't identify whether or not it's just service members or if it's service members and veterans receiving it. They don't track that, but they do track the dollars that were used. And I was just shocked to see the number of our veterans who are in this category. So they're not lazy people who are sitting down doing nothing, just leeching off the taxpayers. That's not who we're talking about here. And I think that we really need to keep that in mind. And finally, what I want to say to you off of that point is there's just no correlation. There's none that exists that drug use in this population is any higher in the general population or it's any higher than any other group that receives taxpayer benefits in this state. And so I don't see why we pick this group out. I just don't. And because of that, I oppose it. And in conclusion, this is unconstitutional. It's not cost effective, and it should be voted no. I'd be happy to yield for any questions if there are any, Madam Speaker.
Chair recognizes Representative Setzler for a question to your right.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Does the gentleman yield?
Yes, sir.
Appreciate your remark earlier when you talked about that it's important and that you don't support misusing public dollars. And I think we all would agree with that. Would you agree that if somebody were found to be, if they were hypothetically found to be trading food stamps for drugs, that that's something that the state has an interest in preventing and should be, action should be pursued against that person?
Yeah.
Would you agree that if somebody traded a housing voucher for drugs, that that should be pursued by the state?
Yes.
Likewise, if somebody were lawfully obtaining prescription drugs and trading those for illegal drugs, would you agree that's something the state has an interest in preventing?
I think any efforts to root out and prevent or stop illegal drug use deserve some attention. My problem with this bill is that I think that it does so in an unconstitutional manner.
And appreciate that. The reason I ask the question is, you know, if you ask where do drugs come from, if someone's obtaining illegal drugs, they buy them, they barter or trade for them, or they could perhaps, you know, steal them somehow. But they're obtaining illegal drugs through some means of exchange. And if somebody is found to be a drug user that's receiving financial benefits, whether they're food stamps or otherwise, they're taking public dollars and within their family budget, as it were, are obtaining illegal drugs. And I think if someone's found to be obtaining illegal drugs, isn't it true? And this is really a question to you, sir. Wouldn't you agree if they're found to be using illegal drugs through drug testing, that's an indication that they're not viable and appropriate benefactors of public dollars, by your own words?
I think that's a reasonable standard, but that's not the standard that's in this bill.
How's that not the standard? Now, again, aside from some technical challenges, you could point out, you know, a line here or a line there where you could argue it could be tightened up. But in principle, is it not true that all we're doing is saying if you're receiving public benefits, you just have to demonstrate that you're not misusing public benefits? Why is that not an appropriate interest of the state?
I agree with the interest of the state, but the clear reading of the bill shows exactly what the criteria would be. And as I articulated, I think these criteria are unconstitutionally broad. If it were limited to what you stated in terms of an individual that used drugs or had been found to have used drugs, then I would have no problem with making that person ineligible.
And, sir, I appreciate that, and I guess as a concluding question, I appreciate your willingness to make them ineligible if they are drug users. I think the question is, because they're coming in to receive public benefits, there's a need to demonstrate that they're in compliance, as it were, and that they're following the law, and that if they're a demonstrated lawbreaker by virtue of taking illegal drugs, I think that just, again, with your own words, designates the state has an interest in not continuing to finance that lifestyle.
Chair recognizes Representative Henson for a question.
Thank you. Does the gentleman yield?
Yes, ma'am.
Isn't it true that I have worked in dental offices that accept Medicaid and therefore more than likely we've been dealing with the population that receives food stamps?
If the lady so states.
And isn't it further true that we have a very high rate of broken appointments because of mothers having more than one child, and oftentimes a youngster, a young baby will get sick, and the mother therefore cannot bring in the child that has the appointment?
If the lady so states.
So you have broken appointments based on issues such as that, family situations? And isn't it also true with regard to demeanor that oftentimes when someone is tired, their behavior could mimic possibility of some other being under the effect of some things? So to go further true, isn't it true that if a mother is tired, if she's been working, if she's had sick children, she could have the appearance of possibly being influenced by drugs when in fact she's tired?
I don't know if that's true or not, but one thing that I forgot to mention is that experts who are in this field can screen in ways that are much more effective and much more meaningful without having to do drug testing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Madam Speaker, I'll yield the well.
The gentleman yields the well. There is a minority report. A minority report in your books. The chair recognizes Representative Oliver to present the minority report.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise as a Democrat, a person who is concerned about the taxpayers' dollars, and to agree with the author of this bill about many things. I want to agree with him that possible welfare fraud, where it exists, should be stopped. I want to agree with him that welfare fraud hurts the interest of the poor and needy of this state. And I want to agree with him that it is a crime, in fact, to take money from the taxpayers and from others who need benefits. And I want to ask him to agree with me that there is a 100% chance in the eventuality that this bill is passed and attempted to be implemented that it will be challenged in court, and a 100% chance that it cannot be sustained by any court, and a 100% chance that the taxpayer will pay not only the attorney fees of the special assistant attorney general hired by Mr. Owens, but also the attorney fees of the plaintiff. This bill is unworkable, and it is flawed in many different technical and operational ways that will prevent its implementation on the impossible result that a court would sustain it. I believe that the gentleman feels strongly that the court is wrong in relation to its decisions on drug testing, but whether or not he believes it's wrong or any of us believe any court decision is wrong, I am respectful of the law of the land. I've been a litigator for 35 years. Litigation comes from conflict, and conflict is costly. The longer I do it, the more conservative I get about assuming risk to go into court. This is not a risk. This is a certain ending of defeat. You cannot, given the many decades of history of drug testing litigation, argue that this unworkable scheme can be sustained. The bill that we passed a few years ago is different than this bill. And it is worse in terms of the history of drug testing litigation. Drug testing was attempted to be applied to members of the General Assembly and was thrown out because we are not a public safety class that endangers the public the way medical personnel are, doctors are, police officers, military. You cannot randomly drug test people generally when they do not have a public safety job and role. Nor can you drug test people on allegations of suspicion that have no reasonable effective definition. Demeanor. I am guaranteeing that your demeanor on days of certain weeks, like day 30, is problematical to me. And I am 100% sure that my demeanor on days like 30 and 40 is problematical to you. This demeanor doesn't even apply to the applicant. It applies to an applicant or recipient. It applies to the irritating 18-year-old son recipient of the mother who's coming in to apply for assistance. The suggestion that arrest and missed appointments on the same line of 48, you have to have an and, a missed appointment and an arrest, that somehow those two have to go together and somehow that's suspicious, is not logical. And others have talked about the fact that if you ever worked someplace where there were drug tested done, that therefore you're suspicious. Not that you were found to have violated a drug test, but that just simply you worked somewhere. But let me point out a couple of other totally unworkable parts of this bill. This doesn't only apply to food stamps. This applies to TANF benefits. Eligibility workers are not caseworkers who deal with families. Eligibility workers are people who do the number application. They have about 700 cases each in the food stamp world. And to suggest that without training, that the author says we don't need to apply, that they will know when to impose a drug test, the person has to go get it, which is automatically going to violate the timing, mandatory timing of food stamps applications. TANF recipients are people who get child care recipients. They're domestic violence victims. The domestic violence victim on the way to the shelter, does she have to go get the drug test first? Does any of this make any sense in terms of an operational program? In appropriations, Chairman England, with his guidance, I have been digging into some attorney fee orders that the state has been paying recently because I don't like paying attorney fees. And I've done a FOIA, and I will give you 200-300 pages of the money the state of Georgia has spent on the Kenny A. case in relation to foster care children. Now, that's a case that should have been brought. State was wrong. Settlement was reached. And an effective plan was implemented. And in that period of time, we've paid somewhere between $10 and $14 million of attorney fees. Today, we pay $500,000 to monitors each year. And we pay $2 million in some series to Georgia State to do data collection. There are today 6,000 people on the waiting list for Meals on Wheels. If we just took a portion of the money we're going to waste, if we attempt to implement House Bill 772, we can feed people on the Meals on Wheels program. I'm going to yield my remaining time to Representative Dukes, but let me close with this. I am a Democrat who cares about taxpayer money. I care about programs working efficiently, honestly, and lawfully. And I cannot vote for this bill.
Chair recognizes Representative Dukes for the remainder of the minority report time.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen of this august body. You know, this bill is really, it's a day 30 bill. It's a windshield vote bill. That's all it is. Everybody on this side can get a chance to say we're against welfare reform and waste, food stamp waste. Everybody on our side can get a chance to say we sit up for the poor people. But actually, it's a lot to do about nothing. And let me tell you why. People do not go into the defects office to even apply for food stamps. We do it online. Government, it is called compass.gov. They don't even go in office. So how in the world and what need will we have to train the welfare workers to observe somebody who is going to make an application online? It makes no sense. They don't go in the office and pick up the stamps. You make application in 5 to 10 days, your card comes in the mail. We're going to train them for what? To analyze what happens in cyberspace? They're going to come into cyberspace with these rims, getting three Doritos. It ain't going to happen. I'm sorry. You can say Mr. Chairman, you can tell I don't eat that. Burritos, fellas, ladies, and gentlemen, it does not happen. This is a day 30 bill. It is 11 o'clock. It is time for the majority leader to do what he does best. So if you need this windshield vote, listen, don't none of us sit around here waiting for people to defraud the government, Republican or Democrat. I'm certainly not for that. Under no way. And we all saw the Fox News station thing where this boy ended up in California eating up all of these lobsters and shrimp with welfare cards. We are not for that. But this bill is not going to address that. All it is going to do, if it is passed, if this body in its wisdom decide to pass this bill, send it over to the other chamber, the governor signs it, is going to cost the state of Georgia money because it is an indefensible proposition. Just like the proposition that said that when I came here in 1996 to qualify, I had to be drug tested. I passed. Gives me some concern about my chairman over there. He said he lost. Obviously, he did okay. But it's a lot to do about nothing. It's going to cost the state of Georgia, if it passes, this body, and the governor signs it, they're going to sue us because it is illegal search and seizure. It's an illegal search, regardless of how much money you have or how little money you have. It is illegal. So, citizens of this state, those of you who believe in liberty and freedom, I hope that you would join with me and say that the citizens of the state of Georgia are worthy of a lot more than that. Madam Speaker, I will yield the will.
Gentleman has yielded the will. Is there any objection to the previous question being ordered? The chair hears none. The previous question is ordered. There is an amendment. Representative Morris. The author of the bill offers the following amendment, AM 331412. For what purpose does Representative Morris rise?
Inquiry, Madam Speaker.
State your inquiry.
Does this amendment state, according to the U.S. Code dealing with electronic benefit transfers, 9A says a state agency may require that an electronic benefit card contain a photograph of one or more members of a household. And also it includes that the code section shall become effective on January 1st, 2016 to allow time to department to be ready for that change. Isn't that true?
I'm sure the gentleman knows that of which he speaks. For what purpose does Representative Oliver rise?
Parliamentary inquiry, Madam Speaker.
State your inquiry.
Isn't it true that in the very well thought out and very intelligent and well researched bill that Representative Welch brought to us earlier about preventing welfare fraud and the use of electronic benefits cards, that the feature relative to photograph on EBT cards was removed based on complaints by the banking industry and other retail establishments that had issues relative to EBT card photograph requirements? And further parliamentary inquiry, isn't there some question, there's certainly a question in my mind, about whether or not you can require EBT cards to have photographs in food stamp applications?
That's a matter for each and every member to decide for himself. Is there any objection to adopting the amendment? There is objection. Does the gentleman move? The gentleman moves. All those in favor of adopting the amendment will vote yes. All those opposed will vote no, and the clerk will unlock the machine. Have all members voted? Have all members voted? If so, the clerk will lock the machine on the adoption of the amendment. The yeas are 109. The nays are 64. The amendment is adopted. Is there any objection to adopting the committee substitute as amended? For what purpose does Representative Thomas of the 56 rise?
Parliamentary inquiry.
State your inquiry.
Is it not true that there were very logical and reasonable and debate that would make everyone know to vote no on this particular legislation?
I'm sure the lady knows that of which she speaks. Is there any objection to adopting the committee substitute as adopted? The chair hears none. The committee substitute as amended is adopted. Is there any objection to agreeing to the report of the committee, which was favorable to the passage of the bill? The chair hears none. The report of the committee as amended is agreed to. Shall this bill now pass? All in favor of the passage of the bill will vote yes. All those opposed will vote no, and the clerk will unlock the machine. Have all members voted? Have all members voted? If so, the clerk will lock the machine on the passage of the bill. The yeas were 107. The nays were 66. The bill, having received the requisite constitutional majority, is therefore passed.